Let's introduce the panel of people who are here to solve your scientific quandaries and conundrums this week. Or should that be conundra? Dani Green is from Anglia Ruskin, and she's also an ecologist. The oceans have really been in the spotlight this year, haven't they, with all the plastics and things?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's great because I've been working on plastics the last 7 years, and thanks to the Attenborough effect, we've finally got pretty much global consensus that people are interested in this and they want to solve the problem, so it's great.
How much rubbish actually is in the oceans in terms of plastics?
A lot.
Do we actually know?
I think 320 million tonnes are produced every year, and around 10% of that makes its way into the rivers and waterways as litter.
Goodness. And once it's there, it just doesn't go anywhere.
It doesn't, or it breaks down into smaller pieces called microplastics.
Which we're going to find out about. So Danny's here to answer any questions about marine biology and marine science and plastics in the ocean. So if you'd like to ask her a question, now is your chance. Sitting next to Danny is Tim Revel. He is the assistant news editor at New Scientist. So you should be across lots of hot science stories, lots of things coming across your desk all the time.
Yeah, we have loads of big stories all the time and, you know, often talking about artificial intelligence or the latest technology such as 3D printing. But one of the big ones we've had recently was questioning arguably the biggest discovery in physics in the last few years, and that is gravitational waves, whether we actually spotted them or not.
Why are people skeptical?
It all comes down to the fact that it's so difficult to spot gravitational waves because even though they're caused by massive events in space, by the time they get to Earth, they're very, very tiny ripples. We're talking about measuring something smaller than the size of a proton. So actually being able to find them is really, really difficult and involves lots of data processing and analysis and algorithms. And all of that means that it's a bit tricky for someone else to check the work of the people who've done it. And so when people have come in afterwards and had a look at what they've done, they've sort of said, maybe you have made a mistake. And that's where the difficulty lies.
I think Bill Bryson argued that one of the smallest things in the world is some of the components in an Airfix kit, which he said roughly on the scale of a proton. I think I'd be inclined to agree with him. Anyway, Tim's here to answer your questions about things relevant to technology. James Pope is a newcomer to the programme. Welcome, James. He's from the British Antarctic Survey and you study climate. But why is everyone obsessing about the poles? Because no one lives at the poles, really, do they? So why is it important to study the poles when the majority of the world's population are not there?
The polar regions are just so important for climate change. You've got ice sheets, which can affect sea level rise. You've got sea ice, which can affect the temperature at the high latitudes and maybe accelerate warming in these regions. And also very important for uptake of carbon into the oceans, heat into the oceans, and even the circulation, which can affect the nice warm temperatures we have in the UK.
So in other words, it really matters what goes on in the poles because it does have an impact here, whether we like it or not. And I guess it's also a barometer for what's going to happen everywhere. If you look at what's happening in the poles, it's a reflection on what's happening worldwide.
Yes, people talk about the poles as being sort of the canary in the coal mine.
Thank you very much, James. And also with us is Laura Carter-Penman, who is a fertility nurse at Bourne Hall. I guess it doesn't take too much explanation of what fertility is, but what does a fertility nurse do?
We assist people through their fertility journey. We advise them on what is the best course of action, what is the best treatment. And we also provide quite a strong counselling role, because as you can imagine, for patients, it's a very stressful time. And we support them through that journey. If they've got a question about their fertility that they'd like to ask, I'd be happy to help.
And there should be no pregnant pauses in the programme.
Fingers crossed.
Much.